Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You see them everywhere. You know those magazines. Yeah, I've bought a few. They show you everything. So many newsstands. Lives I'm passing by. Rows and rows of you. Bound to catch my eye. Now
maybe, like songwriter Duncan Sheik, you've passed a newsstand lately and noticed a lot of magazines featuring lists. On today's soundcheck, 133 reasons why lists are changing music journalism. Well, maybe just a few reasons. Plus, music by spoken word icon Gil Scott Heron and the Portuguese fado singer Marisa. To begin, the latest issue of Blender magazine features the top 144 songs of 2008. Paste magazine offers four 2008 albums that sound even better in 2009. Over in Britain, at Mojo, they're celebrating the 100 Greatest Motown Tracks. And then there are the books, 1,000 Recordings to Hear Before You Die, and the Pitchfork 500. List-style journalism is all the rage. But does that make you a more informed, well-rounded music consumer? We'll debate that question in this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown!
And here with his top 10 reasons to like lists is Rob O'Connor, the editor of Yahoo Music's List of the Day. Taking a somewhat more skeptical view is Elisa Solomon, who directs the Arts and Culture Concentration at Columbia University's Journalism School. And Elisa, let me start with you. Lists, they seem like they're entertaining. Are they, in fact, empty instead?
Not necessarily. I think there can be a lot to be gleaned from lists, and I can give you a list of reasons. I think the issue really is when lists replace other more considered analytical journalism that you start to have a problem.
But don't lists serve the point of getting a conversation started by generating arguments and getting people involved?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, what Rob O'Connor's doing on the Yahoo side, I think, is a lot of fun. You want to go to that site every day. You want to know what's he going to come up with next. And he makes a list and you say, what? Protest songs and no Gil Scott Heron? Are you crazy? So you get engaged. You argue. You show off a little bit of what you know and compare it against what he knows. And I think that's all very, very good fun and has some exchange of opinions there and gets debate going, and I have nothing whatsoever against it. I enjoy it. My concern is when that replaces the space, when that takes up all the real estate and there isn't room for more considered analytical writing.
And is that happening?
I think it is happening. We've seen the 25% of arts journalists lose their jobs in the last year alone, and the numbers keep declining. And there's less and less space in straight newspapers and in journals for the critical essay, absolutely.
Rob, what you're doing there at Yahoo Music with the list of the day, do you see that as a form of music journalism?
Sure. It's a way of just getting information out there that people might not otherwise come across, sure.
And what about the idea that, you know, your list of, you know, the 27 best songs that feature the word booger, you know, is taking space away from a considered, you know, essay on the political ramifications of early hip hop?
Well, it's a matter of finding a place where that would, you know, fit. I mean, for what I do, people are looking for lists, so I'm just constantly trying to come up with yet another list that people will want to read that isn't like the old list.
So how do you go about doing something like that?
You make a list. You literally start making lists of lists and try to come up with every crazy idea you can come up with and see which ones will actually take flight and which ones just become even more convoluted than when you started.
Brett from Long Island City left this comment on the soundcheck page of our website. I just went to the Yahoo Music page for the first time and thought it was great. As the music I typically listen to isn't chart-topping, sites like this are an easy and fun way to keep up with what the kids are listening to. Do you see it that way, Rob?
Well, if I'm what the kids are listening to, that's news to me. But I think it's a way of, you know, what you try to do is introduce, you know, names that people don't know and mix them in with some names that they will to keep their attention. It's kind of a balance a lot of the time, because if you make it too obscure, people just immediately turn off and think, oh, you're talking over my head or you're trying to be an elitist or something, which isn't the case, but it's still what gets perceived. And then there's the... if you put names in there that they do know, that will definitely grab the eyeball. And it's very important, too, to run pictures of these people, because I've noticed that even if I write about somebody, if they don't run a picture, a lot of people don't seem to see that the person made the list.
Can I pick up on that word elitist that you just grumbled out there,
Rob,
kind of sneered at, and I could hear the contempt coming through the microphone there. I think that There's that expertise is an important quality for writers about art and culture and about music, and I think you yourself have quite a lot of it. And we've just finally finished a 8-year administration that degraded the idea of expertise in anything. You know, we got rid of scientists and had ideology instead, running our science. I mean, there was a kind of degrading of the idea of expertise in any field. And I think that that's kind of polluted the entire culture. And I don't think there's really anything wrong with you having expertise as a music critic. And I think that's an important element of talking intelligently and in a reasoned way about the work. I don't think you're just putting opinions out there. I think you're putting out some judgment.
Rob, how much of your expertise went into the list of the 10 unforgivable sins of Bruce Springsteen's performance at the Super Bowl?
That was a reaction piece. I had no intention of actually writing that until I was watching the performance, and even afterwards, actually. I was just sort of, even 10 minutes afterwards, I was still sort of just pacing the house a little bit, just sort of rambling on about how just shockingly obnoxious it was, how it felt like a QVC performance more than a musical performance. And so I just sat down, and I was originally going to do 5, and it expanded into 10, and then I shot it right over, and they ran it, and people went to town on it. So.
All right, we're talking about music lists with Rob O'Connor, who is editor of Yahoo Music's List of the Day, and with Professor Elisa Solomon, who runs the Arts and Culture Concentration at Columbia University's Journalism School. And I suppose, Elisa, what is, you know, we're talking about sort of people writing these lists. There are editors, presumably, at work here who are thinking, yeah, another list, that'll be great. Is it just easy? Is that what this boils down to?
I think it is easy to read. I mean, I think they can be hard to write, depending on the nature of them. As I said a moment ago, I think what Rob's doing has a lot of knowledge behind it, and I think it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. But I think the nature of lists, just by announcing themselves of lists as lists, they say to a reader, this is not going to take a lot of your time. You know, it's not going to stretch you intellectually too much. You can just graze your eyes over it and move on to the next thing. That's what, you know, putting list at the top says. So I think it's very easy for readers, and it's a way to draw people onto a site, to keep them there, to send them to link to other things, to see the advertising.
But it's not just websites. I mean, magazines, you know, print magazines are doing this as well. You know, what used to be page after page of essay or you know, a full-on review or what have you, is very often now replaced by lists.
Yeah, that's the sad thing, and that's why when you have only these lists, it does degrade the discourse, and it changes the expectations. So they're not nefarious in and of themselves, But when they set up expectations that the way you engage a conversation about music is in a list or with maybe two sentences about something, then that changes the appetite, I think, for more considered analysis.
Rob, does it in fact get people involved a little bit more when it's in a list as opposed to a writer writing what he or she knows?
Well, you know, you're talking about a lot of different product that's out there. I mean, one of the problems is that magazines are always trying to cover so much product that's out there. I mean, to me, the 80-word record review is probably more damaging than the list, because the list, everybody knows, is just a list. Mm-hmm. And people will argue, you know, the placement of it, and it gets people somewhat engaged. And, you know, people get caught up in, like, what's number 24 versus what's number 17, as if, you know, if you woke up a different day, it wouldn't come out completely different. But, you know, I think it'd be great if we could have magazines that had long, detailed reviews that, you know, on things that of interest. But it seems like it's just product, and maybe the list is the way that they answer that.
We're debating whether whether music lists in the magazines, whether they be online or in print, just how relevant, how useful are they? Rob O'Connor is editor of Yahoo Music's List of the Day, and Lisa Solomon is the director of the Arts and Culture Concentration at Columbia University's Journalism School.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
I know they're silly, but music lists serve the same purpose as sports lists. They get the conversation going. Part of the fun of being a sports fan is arguing over the 10 best left-handed pitchers, or the 5 strangest batting stances, or the top 50 steroid abusers.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
And while you're there, you can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Petri in Chicago left an interesting comment, writing, "When compiling a top N list, it should be assumed that the list compiler has good knowledge of, let's say, 20 times N candidates. I doubt that is often the case in lists compiled by a single writer, especially with small publications. I saw top 200 albums of 2008 list the other day written by a single person." Rob, did you cull your 10 unforgivable sins of Bruce Springsteen's Super Bowl performance from a list of 200 unforgivable sins?
No, that was a pure reaction piece. I just, you know, like I say, I started with thinking I was going to do 5, and I suddenly realized, of course, you always end up with about 8 or 9, and then you're kind of stretching for that 10th just to get that nice round number. But yeah, that's sort of, you know, what you might cross to bear.
Okay, so that, now we're getting somewhere. So maybe it isn't always the 10 most or the 25 best or something. Sometimes you have to stretch to get that round number. Why do you need to do that? Why can't we just say the 8 unforgivable sins of Bruce Springsteen? Would that be any less of a list? Well, it would by 2, wouldn't it?
A lot of people would. It would be 2 shorter. So, yeah, I just tend to think in those kind of terms anyhow. Like, I challenge myself that way and see if I can't, you know, just make it work somehow. Usually what you end up with is too many. You know, like when you go to just do like the top 25, you know, I don't know, R&B singers or something. I mean, you can end up with a list of 200, and then you've got to make ridiculous decisions of, you know, who's better than who.
I mean, to me, there's a kind of way in reading some of these that I've enjoyed that the list maker is kind of functioning like a good DJ. You know, sort of juxtaposing these songs together, these musicians that you might not put right next to each other. You know, would you normally think of Frank Sinatra in the same paragraph with Joni Mitchell? You know, maybe not, and putting them together is kind of interesting. But if that's all you're ever going to read about either of those two artists, then, you know, it's kind of impoverished landscape for music writing.
So will there be, I mean, is this kind of list-based journalism likely to ever, you know, generate a critic on the order of a George Bernard Shaw or, you know, more recently a Robert Christgau or a Greil Marcus?
Well, you know, Christgau wrote lists of his own, certainly.
True enough.
But not exclusively. And, you know, there was somebody with real supple ability to move from the very short form to the extremely long form kind of journalism, and the short pieces often condensed the immense knowledge that he has about music. So I don't think they need to be mutually exclusive, but I think given what's happening in the industry right now, and the expectation that every publication reach, function under huge economies of scale. I mean, that's where we're running into the trouble, I think.
All right, so lists are probably in our immediate future, for better or worse, and we've been debating whether it's for better or worse with Rob O'Connor, editor of Yahoo Music's Lists of the Day, and you can find his lists linked on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org, and with Elisa Solomon, who directs the Arts and Culture Concentration at Columbia University's Journalism School. Rob, Elisa, thank you both for being with us today.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Portuguese fado singer Marisa shares her latest album, which includes a version of Charlie Chaplin's Smile, fado style. And later, we'll have a chance to hear from spoken word icon Gil Scott-Heron, a precursor to hip-hop before anyone knew what hip-hop was. That's coming up later on Soundcheck.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised.